The views and opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of WEFT-FM, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. And now here is this week's edition of IMC Radio News.
Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
It's 5:30 on Monday evening, and it's time for the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center Radio News, your weekly look at grassroots community news on your grassroots community radio station, WEFT 90.1 FM. It's Monday, February 23rd, 2004. I'm Sarah Knaus, and I'm the host and producer of this week's show. Tonight, we'll take a closer look at the concept of homeland. That potent word catapulted from mere invisibility in the American lexicon prior to 9/11 to become perhaps the most emotionally and symbolically resonant term in the war on terrorism's language arsenal. For this week's show, I produced two sound collages of off-the-cuff definitions of the words home and land provided by Central Illinois residents at farmers markets and home megastores within a 60-mile radius of Champaign-Urbana. I was curious about how those concepts were understood separately before they became joined. Try to understand the strange power of that compound word. Also on this week's show, I read a history of the term homeland, compiled by the curators of the art exhibition of the same name that took place last year at the Whitney Museum of American Art in New York. But first, here are your headlines from around Illinois and beyond.
Hi, I'm Adam Davis.
And I'm Sarah Lazar with the headlines for this week's IMC Radio News.
The Champaign-Urbana Community Wireless Network has been awarded a significant grant from the Open Society Institute, funded by the Soros Foundation to develop wireless technology to be used around the globe, especially by developing nations. The Community Wireless Network, a program of the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, is building a high-speed communications network that promises to support publishing and citywide internet radio broadcast by citizens, a community-owned local telephone service, and bandwidth sharing. The network uses off-the-shelf wireless hardware to spread a web of network connectivity across town. The CWN uses open-source software and open architecture hardware created by the CWN development team. Using essentially the same Wi-Fi equipment you may use in your home or office, the CWN puts equipment on rooftops to connect users with their neighbors to form a high-speed community network. Since the news of the Open Society grant became public Wednesday, some activists have questioned the use of money from George Soros, whose currency speculation had disastrous effects on developing economies in the 1990s. Soros has emerged as a leading philanthropist for progressive causes and for the defeat of George Bush's re-election campaign. But in some circles, his history as a profiteer off the global economy has not been forgotten.
A long drawn-out tug-of-war among electric utilities in Illinois is finally about to end. The prize is Illinois Power Company, which serves Champaign-Urbana, among other communities. The winner is the Ameren Company, and the loser is Commonwealth Edison Company. The IP saga actually began 3 decades ago. The utility, with the lowest rates in Illinois at the time, had big aspirations. It wanted to become a nuclear utility. So it began work on the Clinton Nuclear Power Station. The utility got in over its head. Everything that could go wrong did. What began as a $400 million project ended up costing $5 billion and was only half as large as intended. Of course, ratepayers ended up paying for the plant, and the rates went from the bottom towards the top of the heap. After a while, the Illinois electric market was deregulated, and IP was purchased by Dynegy, an Enron wannabe from Houston. However, Dynegy suffered financial problems and cut corners at IP, causing the quality of service to deteriorate. Then, in need of more cash, Dynegy put IP up for sale. The first serious bidder was ComEd, which sought to pay for the purchase by having the legislature, push through guaranteed rate increases for both IP and ComEd customers. While Governor Broad had no problem with the ComEd proposal, Mike Madigan, the Speaker of the Illinois House, found it too large to swallow. He killed the bill and publicly scolded ComEd, which came off appearing a bit greedy. That left the door open to Ameren to move in, and a couple of weeks ago, the parties reached a deal. That deal will leave Ameren with a lock on the downstate electric market while ComEd feasts off the ratepayers of Chicago and its suburbs.
The University of Colorado is embroiled in a growing rape scandal involving its football program that is raising fundamental questions about the function and purpose of college athletics. At the heart of the scandal are numerous allegations of rape by football players and recruits, 7 at last count, and reports of the widespread use of sexual assault of women to recruit prospective players. The rape accusations are so widespread that one even comes from a player on the Colorado football team. Katie Nida, who was a kicker for the team, claimed that she was raped by a teammate. After the incident, she transferred to the University of New Mexico. It is not clear who at the university is involved in these activities. Questions have been directed towards the football coach, Gary Barnett, who came to Colorado in 1999 from Northwestern. He responded to Ms. Nida's rape accusation by saying that she was a terrible kicker. Furthermore, another woman alleging rape by a football player said that Barnett told her he would stand 100% behind the player. She did not pursue the charge. The university administration has been slow to react to this situation, but the scandal is now too large to ignore. The university has launched an investigation of the problem, and President Elizabeth Hoffman suspended Barnett with full pay in light of his remarks about Ms. Nida. What will happen to the football program, its players, and Mr. Barnett remains to be seen. Nevertheless, a picture has emerged of an athletics program spinning out of control. Furthermore, there has been no tangible evidence to date of any effort to rein the program back in. In a climate where sexual assault is treated with a wink and a nod, how much is that culture and behavior tied in with college athletics, and how much does that exist at other schools? The University of Illinois had its own athletic scandal to deal with this season when 3 varsity basketball players were implicated in an apartment robbery this season. The fact that the investigation was suddenly dropped with a check written by a well-connected local law firm to the victims suggests that Illinois does not give confidence about the well-being of our athletic program. The question is, what other transgressions by athletes have been swept under the rug by the university and local community?
On Sunday, February 8th, George W. and John Howard, the Australian deputy, agreed to sign a free trade agreement between the U.S. and Australia. Indeed, just when you thought NAFTA had finished expanding, this treaty is now in danger of being ratified. While the agreement requires congressional approval on the American end, John Howard needs no approval from Australian Parliament. This agreement would give corporations increased leverage when suing Australian government over environmental and domestic regulations that interfere with profits, give U.S. drug companies extra rights that will allow them to make greater profits off of Australian buyers, override quarantine and labeling laws for Australian GMOs, give U.S. television companies more showtime, undermine small farmers in Australia and the U.S., and more. While efforts to liberalize foreign markets are predicated on the belief that the advance of capitalism in developing countries improves standards of living for all, this just simply hasn't been the case. For example, the North American Free Trade Agreement has displaced 1.75 million Mexican farmers and caused Mexican incomes to nosedive. These agreements are sparking protests and dissent all over the U.S. and Australia. For more information on the resistance, go to www.tradewatchoz.org.
Thousands of Palestinians took to the streets in Gaza City on February 20th to urge Arafat to free 4 Palestinians who were on trial for killing U.S. security guards last October. On February 21st, thousands gathered to protest the West Bank separation wall. In related news, February 23rd has been declared by Palestinian leaders to be a national day of protest against the apartheid wall.
Now, for our feature presentation on Homeland.
Oh, gosh. My home is lovely. Well, it's hard. I can say it one word. Home, it's a home. You make the home. You make the home. I don't care what it is. It could be a fancy home. Mine's just a plain old brick home. But it's a chapel to me. It's mine. And I got a nice wife and kids in there. It's a home. And the grandkids, I can't really get that one away. No, there's no way, because I enjoy it.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
you and me.
To me, home means family, comfort, just the things that we work, we go out away from home to work for so that we can come back to it. Pretty well sums it up.
Home means children.
For me, is my wife and family.
You know, family.
That's where the family is.
That's where we live. Where we go, as long as she's right there.
Sleep, have fun. It means family to me, and good food.
And children and my grandchildren.
When I think home, I think of family. I personally believe it's a husband and wife.
Home is a family home.
You have family where people love you, and it's where you can just come to unwind, where you can...
It means warmth, love,
I'm thinking of his warmth. You know, something somewhere I'm able to go after the day and enjoy myself, also who is there, who's out there.
Where my friends are. That's where I belong.
Yeah, I'd be willing to participate, but I'm not sure I could contribute anything that's not rather trite. Home is where the heart is.
Yeah, definitely home is where the heart is.
You often hear the phrase, home is where the heart is. You know, and these days, a lot is
where we feel at home.
It's just where you feel comfortable, where you want to be.
It's a safe haven for everyone to like go back to from the stress and rigors of the day.
It can also mean a place that you feel safe, a comfortable place.
Home to me means a place of harmony.
Where you hang your hat.
Of course, you have to have the other people because, you know, when we were in Sacramento, it was Southern California that was the other, the hated ones. And then now it's like the Champagne people are starting to take on that.
Safe. Get away from everywhere. Get away from the world.
Home, the best place in the world.
It's the main place where I can go, get off my tune, relax. That's rewarding in life.
That feeling of that security, knowing
home
that there's somebody there for you.
Home is a place where I feel secure. Home is where I can lock the door and don't have to open it. Home is where I can kick back and relax. Home is where I can run naked.
I actually spend almost all day thinking about home, you know, when am I arriving home and what time and, you know, and all those types of things.
This land was made for you and me.
This year's kind of center, too.
Illinois,
for me, I do a lot of work from home. To make it someplace I want to be. Be creative.
The place to live, I guess. I mean, I don't know.
I'm going to go after Gunfield News Produce.
No, I would have bought it. That's from Western Education, see. I didn't go to the big school.
I think home is just where I'd rather be instead of being anywhere else. That's, I'd rather be home.
One place you can always go back.
I spent quite a lot of years figuring it out, and I'm still not there, because I don't know. I often refer to home as Bosnia, but also, you know, it's not anymore.
Home is what you take with you wherever you go, that makes wherever you are.
This year's kind of center, too. At least for me, I do a lot of work from home, so I kind of have to make it someplace I want to be and be creative.
I just spent a lot of time talking about home because, so I'm sort of looking at it from the other point of view right now.
Home can mean different things to different people. I think of maybe roots. It's something that you ties you back from where you start.
I feel like home is being taken away from us.
And also a place you can dream in, too.
I don't want to buy anybody else's definition of it.
It's a sort of an odyssey, right? And that's always completely grabbed me. But I always feel like I've been on a lifelong odyssey. And I really don't know where I'm going, but I'm going home.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From the Redwood Forest to the New York Island, the snow-capped mountain to the Gulf Stream waters, this land is made for you and me.
From Homeland, the catalog of the exhibition by the same name at the Whitney Museum of American Art, sponsored by the Independent Study Program, May 23rd to June 29th, 2003. A Homeland Timeline. In 1670, the Oxford English Dictionary initially distinguishes two senses of homeland, the land which is one's home, or where one's home is, before settling on the more general, one's native land. 1918, British Foreign Secretary Arthur James Balfour, eager to enlist the support of Jews for the Allies in World War I, in 1917 supports the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people. 1 year later, an unsighted writer for the British Political Science Quarterly makes the leap to today's word when he notes Balfour's declaration in favor of the establishment of a Jewish homeland in Palestine. Late 1920s. Austria and Germany develop province-based militias known as the Heimwehr, Home Guard, or Heimatschutz, Homeland Defense Forces. 1934. German Chancellor Adolf Hitler creates the national agency, the Central Security Office, for the homeland. 1945. Harry Truman, in a July 18 diary entry referring to the Manhattan Project, believe Japs will fold up before Russia comes in. I am sure they will when Manhattan appears over their homeland. 1948. David Ben-Gurion and his fellow Zionists sign the declaration establishing the State of Israel on May 14, 1948, in which the Hebrew word moladet, translated as homeland, appears four times. 1968. In Article 1 of its national charter, the Palestine Liberation Organization states, Palestine is the national homeland of the Arab-Palestinian people. It is an indivisible part of the Arab homeland. 1969. South African Foreign Minister R.F. Botha introduces the Bantu Homeland Citizenship Bill, linking blacks to tribal sites of origin, or Bantustans, seeking thereby to separate the races permanently. The bill is denounced as evidence that white supremacists in South Africa regard black Africans as aliens. 1977. As part of the Quadrennial Defense Review, mandated by the U.S. Congress, a defense panel is set up to rethink military strategy up to 2020. The panel foresees a need to counter potential terrorism and other transnational threats to the sovereign territory of the nation. Its recommendation of an increased emphasis on homeland defense receives little attention. 1997. In its report, Transforming Defense, National Security in the 21st Century, the National Defense Panel first uses the word homeland in its current sense, prefiguring the way the term will be employed by the future Department of Homeland Security. 2000. Washington think tank, the Project for the New American Century, publishes a policy report entitled Rebuilding America's Defenses Strategy. It identifies four essential missions for the 21st century, the first being homeland defense. October, the Journal of Homeland Security is founded. 2001, September 12, Connecticut Democrat Senator Joe Lieberman on Larry King Live. I think yesterday was a turning point in American history, and I think that what it says to us is that we have got to begin to organize to defend our homeland in a way we never have before. October 8, the Office of Homeland Security and the Homeland Security Council are established by executive order. 2002, November 25, President Bush signs the Homeland Security Act, creating the Department of Homeland Security and uniting under one department the Coast Guard, the Border Patrol, the Customs Service, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Central Intelligence Agency, and the Federal Emergency Management Agency. December 16. First special registration deadline for male nationals from Iran, Iraq, Syria, Libya, and Sudan to register with the INS. In subsequent deadlines, men from Algeria, Bahrain, Eritrea, Lebanon, Morocco, North Korea, Oman, Pakistan, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Somalia, Tunisia, United Arab Emirates, and Yemen are also forced to register. 2003, March 1. The INS is renamed the Bureau of Citizenship and Immigration Services, a bureau of the Department of Homeland Security.
That would probably be the, to me, just the area, like out in the yard, and what, you know, you would own. You own land.
Property.
Property. Nice size piece of property.
What do people think?
That's a good question.
Somebody's property.
Property.
That'd be the first thing on my mind.
Property that does not have a building on it, I guess.
Second thing, I guess, would be just a house sitting on a piece of property.
This place that God destined for once to build his own proper to stay, and this is a place that God just destined that we all can make it a better place.
Real estate, ground. The house sits on.
When Johnny comes marching home again, hurrah, hurrah, we'll lend him a hearty welcome,
hurrah, hurrah. When I think of land, it would be where I live. That would be my land. Where your home is. That would be a place to call your own, place to express your individuality. Something that's a very personal space.
You can be a home or, plant a garden or do anything, you know, that'd be suitable to maintain as a human being.
Way to, kind of enhance nature, not all concrete, not all house, and trees and birds. And
just a place where the plants grow and people live.
Vacation, green, just green, greenery, and fresh and pure and blue sky. That's what I think of when I think of land. Of course, it might be because I need a vacation.
And we'll all feel gay when Johnny comes marching home.
I just think like
acres.
Ground, fields, acres, stuff like that.
Yeah,
that's my definition of land.
The laurel wreath is ready now to place upon his loyal brow.
There's land, ground, earth, dirt, space.
The land is like a big open area, kind of
acreage, like landscape.
Kind of like fields or big area with a lot of space.
Some where you build can be in an environment for anything really.
I think of it in a frame of okay, that's where the cows are, is out on the land. Land that's tillable or non-tillable, that's land. I don't consider where our house is at as land.
Property.
Right.
So use it for agriculture purposes, growing crops.
Marching home, Johnny comes marching home.
land as an agricultural production, growing things. Just brown. That's about it, I guess. I don't know. Just...
Well, I guess when I think of land, I think of ground around me, my yard, the fields,
trees,
then land of the of America, the whole country.
Johnny's coming home. Johnny's coming home.
Freedom. That's what comes to me.
This is my land. This is our land. This is God's land. The land is very valuable, and crops and people live by the land, as well as by all that's included in the economy of growth and food and living.
For this week's edition of the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center Radio News on your community radio station, WEFT 90.1 FM. Be sure to turn in at 5:30 next Monday, but in the meantime, visit our website at www.ucimc.org or pick up a copy of our monthly newspaper, The Public Eye. I'm Sarah Canales, your host and producer for this week's show. Headlines were coordinated by Sarah Lazar and read by Sarah Lazar and Adam Davis. The UCIMC is always looking for contributions for our website, our newspaper, and this radio show. If you have a story to tell or a perspective to share, the UCIMC is here to give you the tools you need to find an audience and speak your mind. Stop by the IMC at 218 West Main Street in downtown Urbana, or call us at 217-344-8820. Here is a PSA from a new event sponsored by the IMC. Hey, are you bored of the same old bar scene with the same old bands? Are you tired of staying at home at night watching TV? Boredom is bad. We all hate it. The winter's been long and cold, and now it's time to shake it all off. Get up, get out, and do it. The Independent Media Center, in conjunction with Clamor Magazine, presents Kill Your Humdrum Culture, Make Party Now. Get down with the one-night stand bands, DJ Kajika and DJ Zozo, the Radical Cheerleaders, and local Hot Stuff's puppeteer, Beth Simpson. But that's not all. Assorted political performances will be scattered here and there, interspersed with video pieces by Sarah Knaus and footage from the IMC Video Group. It will be an interactive collage of music, dancing, cheering, and art. The best thing about this party is that all proceeds go to benefit the IMC and Clamor Magazine. Our party will be linked by video feed to many other parties all across the U.S. So make sure you get yourself out of your house and get down to the Iron Post, 120 South Race Street, Urbana, February 28th, 8:30 p.m. to 1 a.m., $5 to $50 contributions. This is an all-ages show.